Hello, thanks for joining me for Rear Vision here on ABC Radio National. I'm Keri Phillips.
But first, to the continuing woes of a high-flying company that's crashed to earth, with ABC Learning Centres going into voluntary administration this morning. Parents of more than 120,000 children are hearing that the centres will remain open for the moment.
ABC Learning is the largest privately owned childcare centre operator in Australia. This morning, the company was placed into voluntary administration, owing almost $1 billion to a range of local and international banks.
The repercussions of the collapse of ABC Learning are still being felt around the country, and the associated legal matters will take years to play out. Today, Rear Vision looks at the history of childcare centres in Australia and how ABC Learning became such a giant before it went bust. The first childcare centres were set up here in the 19th century to look after the children of working mothers. Professor Shirley Swain is a social historian at the Australian Catholic University and a senior research fellow in the School of Historical Studies at the University of Melbourne.
19th century creches borrowed from a French idea, which had been founded in France in the first half of the 19th century, so it takes half a century to get to Australia. And they were charitable organisations that were set up mainly by women who expressed concern about the conditions of children whose mothers needed to work. So to get support for those creches, they talk about what's happening to those children. Whether that's reliable or not, we don't know. But they talk about them being left alone or being left with their older brothers and sisters or with neighbours, and the need for them to be taken into a safe place. And they have as a kind of second goal underneath that, somehow they'll care for the children better than their mothers can. So they'll be able to educate the mothers about how to feed their children properly, how to clothe them, how to keep them clean, those kind of things. So they have an educative function as well.
Despite the fact that you had to pay to use them, there was a stigma associated with these creches. There was a sense of shame for women who had to work as well. If you were lucky enough to belong to the financially secure middle class, you stayed at home. These charitable creches continued to provide childcare on a small scale alongside the development of kindergartens up to the Second World War, when suddenly the demand for workers drew lots more women into the workforce and the Commonwealth government recognised it would need to provide care for their preschool children.
It's interesting. It's got kind of several origins. But the key one are the planners in the government itself in Canberra, who are women with a background in, if not directly in communism, but certainly in left organisations. And they've been taken on board to do the kind of social planning that was necessary to see people through the war. And of course, they also have post-war reconstruction in mind when they're doing it. And once the gates are open to actively recruiting mothers, they take advantage of that and they go out there and set up meetings in all the states about the existing providers, most of whom are simply providing kindergartens, and say, okay, we've all got to get behind the war effort. We've got to do this. The initial government funding is for extending existing services. So if you're running a kindergarten, you actually extend it so that it can operate all day, or in some cases, even longer hours so that you can allow for the night shift. But there are also groups of women, often again with a strong left-wing bent, who see this opportunity to actually argue for childcare as a right that everybody should have access to. And they put forward far more ambitious plans to the government of all-encompassing children or family centres, which are not dissimilar to the kind of thing that Kevin Rudd's floated in recent years, the one-stop shop kind of thing, that you'll have a centre which can deal with preschool children or school-aged children when their mothers are in work. That will provide all the meals so mum doesn't need to shop, she can just devote herself to work. That'll be kind of community centres that people can drop into and get mutual support, and that'll have a strong educational component and won't be stigmatised as being a charity.
This ambitious model was only fully brought to life in the Brunswick Children's Centre in Melbourne, and after the war the federal government applied the brakes to publicly funded childcare. But it wasn't long before the demand to provide childcare again became manifest.
Yes. In fact, it comes from an unlikely origin. Not unlikely if you think in terms of economics, but unlikely if you think of who's going to be interested in children. It again comes from the Commonwealth government, and it's the Commonwealth government concerned that there are not enough workers. And that if they're going to keep the industrial growth going, economic growth generally, they look and they think there's all of these women that we've given a good education to now. And remember, in the years after the Second World War, most women are now getting a secondary education as well, often a tertiary education. You've got all these trained nurses and teachers and office workers and other professionals who, because of the way we run the country, are having children staying home and not coming back to work. So we're losing all that investment. So the initial call for Commonwealth funding for childcare actually comes from people who are concerned with productivity and economic growth. Now, into that discussion comes the feminist voice, now informed by a new generation of feminists, not many of whom have children, but some do, who see universal childcare as one of their six key goals. They actually want a 24-hour childcare, which alarmed a lot of people, the idea that you could place your children for 24 hours. They didn't really mean that. They meant that it should be open for 24 hours. But that was one of their six goals. And the Community Childcare Organisation in Melbourne really grows out of that call, although it's informed by some overseas developments as well. And they argue for childcare, not as the government does, as something that will get women back into the workforce. They say that all mothers should have access to childcare, or to put it the other way, with a kind of throwback to the 19th century, that all children will benefit from childcare because the kind of attenuated nuclear family isolated in its little house does not do the best by children.
Professor Deborah Brennan, Deputy Director of the Social Policy Research Centre at the University of New South Wales, says that a historic split in the way services for children were seen set the path for subsequent developments here in Australia.
Yeah, well, the post-war period is really quite interesting. One of the contextual aspects of understanding childcare is that in Australia we've got a really long-standing split between services that are seen as educational, such as preschools and kindergartens, and services that are seen as childcare. And that split goes right back to the 19th century, and it's really been something that's bedeviled the whole sector. But in the post-war period, we saw a growth of kindergartens in many states, but we saw childcare, that is extended hours services that took really young babies as well as 3- and 4-year-olds, languish really with very little attention from governments. And we saw the state governments, but not the Commonwealth, picking up preschool. There was a little bit of interest from the private sector. This part of the story is often forgotten, I think. But when in 1970, a little government agency called the Women's Bureau, which was part of the Federal Department of Labor, decided to have a look at childcare, they actually found about 500 private for-profit childcare centres operating in Australia and 40 not-for-profits. There was a lot of concern about the for-profit ones, what their standards were in particular, because childcare wasn't highly regulated at this point. Still isn't very highly regulated, in my view. And it was at that stage that a lot of activists started to get themselves organised. And those activists were in some rather, I think what some people today might see as rather surprising quarters. Some, as I've mentioned, were in the Department of Labor in Canberra. A large number were in the Labor Party, and we heard a lot about them once the Whitlam government got elected. But in the late 1960s and early 1970s, there were also women in the Liberal Party who played a significant role in this story, and especially in getting the first piece of Commonwealth legislation passed, and that was the Commonwealth Childcare Act that was passed in 1972, and it was passed by the McMahon government. And that basically said, look, the Commonwealth needs to start getting involved in this area because we've got growing numbers of women in the workforce, very little provision for their children, and our advice is that the sort of care that most parents could actually afford if they had to pay for this purely out of their pockets wouldn't really be ideal. That's why we need the Commonwealth to come in and actually subsidise service provision.
At the same time as Australia was deciding that childcare and the education of young children would be two separate things, elsewhere in the developed world, represented by the OECD, a different approach was evolving, according to Professor Colette Taylor, Chair of Early Childhood Education and Care at Melbourne Graduate School of Education.
In the OECD in the 70s, there were
writers in social policy area suggesting that care and education might be best considered together in the case of early childhood. A child's care, education and upbringing were seen to be connected, interrelated and integrated, such that providing separate kinds of services may not have been the most appropriate way to go. It was the Nordic countries who really took that up and took on early childhood education and care as a focus on the right of a child to have a developmentally relevant and helpful program, one that considered them as citizens in their own right who really were on about learning, development, care and upbringing. In our case, we set up child care centres and we left kindergartens alone. And that, I think, was the marking of a pathway in Australia that we're still seeing today as a problem for us.
You're listening to ABC Radio National. Keri Phillips here with Rear Vision. Today, a history of childcare centres in Australia. Although the Commonwealth Child Care Act of 1972 had been passed by the McMahon Liberal government, it was the Whitlam Labor government that implemented it and began to diversify the services that were offered.
The Child Care Act had brought in funding for what we now call long day care, so services that are open from seven or so in the morning till around six in the evening and generally open for 50 weeks a year. But under Labor, family daycare also became part of the Commonwealth Government's suite of funded programs or services. So family daycare is care in the home of the caregiver, and the caregiver has to receive at least some minimal training and supervision. It's not just child minding, it's actually regulated and with at least some quality controls. We also, in that early 1970s period, had some really interesting tensions emerging about around the kinds of services that families and communities might value, and a lot of tension too. So there was a view, particularly from Sydney, that work-based childcare was a desirable form of care, and some fabulous women who established workplace services in conjunction with trade unions and employers. But our Melbourne sisters, on the whole, took quite a strong line against work-based childcare. Melbourne was the home of the community childcare movement. There were issues around whether centre-based care was the best form of care for children or whether family-based care was preferable. And there were issues, of course, around the qualifications and what sort of professional status was appropriate for people working in children's services. And there were some people who were starting to say, look, you know, this is a really serious and professional area of women's employment and we ought to treat it that way and be fighting for appropriate remuneration for staff and training paths and so on. And others saying, look, no, this is an extension of family and community and we don't want professionals coming in and taking over and telling us how to bring up our children. So it really was a time of enormous ferment, that short 3-year period.
Supporters of the community childcare model believed it would provide a sense of community for children that was lacking in the suburbs. And during the Whitlam years, it became the dominant model, a system where the government subsidised the wages and qualifications of the staff in not-for-profit community centres.
It required people to pay still. You paid not only in money, but you paid in time, that you put in time on the roster yourself, so that it was seen as some kind of cooperative organisation. It was explicitly, in comparison with the later services, not-for-profit, so that all the money that came in was spent on maintaining the organisation for the benefit of the children rather than for the benefit of whoever invested in the centre. And the notion that it was community-managed, and which meant parent-managed, took away that old stigma that had been associated with the charitable creches, where it was somewhere where you went, where people told you what was good for you. It was at its most popular in the inner suburbs, I've got to say, where you had this group of women who were bored by being at home with their children and saw this as a way out where they could still be good mothers but also have a life of their own. It's when it then is pushed out from there to other suburbs that it starts to hit trouble.
In what way?
Well, it hits trouble on two levels. The first is its assumption that childcare is good for all children. That was actually offensive to a lot of outer suburban mums for whom being home with their kids was the best thing they'd ever done. That's what they'd wanted to do for as long as they could remember. Their mums had done that for them. They thought that was good childcare. And this kind of notion that that wasn't good enough, that you somehow had to have your child in childcare being educated or whatever from the earliest moment, they found that difficult. It was a problem for women who were in the workforce out of economic necessity because they didn't have time to go and do all this volunteering as well. They also weren't that chuffed about the idea of community. Immigrant women, for instance, are the first big entrance into the workforce, particularly the industrial workforce. And whenever they're surveyed, they say, we want childcare at the workplace. The community childcare people said, no, that's terrible. It ties women to their employer and they won't be able to demand their rights at work, et cetera, because if they lose their employment, they lose their childcare. But people in those settings repeatedly said, we want it there. Various ethnic groups said, we want childcare that responds to our culture. We don't want them going into an Anglo culture that these educated middle-class women are going to put on them. So you've got that group coming out as well. And you've got that large group that continues even today who say the people we trust with our children are our mums, our aunties, our brothers and sisters and our friends, people like us. And what they mean is someone who loves them.
After the fall of the Whitlam government in 1975, Dame Beryl Beaurepaire and other senior women within the Liberal Party ensured that Australia's childcare policy continued under Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser. Then, during the mid-80s, under the Hawke Labor government, things began to change.
Some of the what came to be called the economic rationalists in the Labor Party began to look very long and hard at the growth of the childcare program and to say, we don't know where this is going to end and we're not happy with this. So I think it would be fair to say that there was a huge tension played out between those who supported a non-profit, community-based, high-quality childcare system and a group of much more economically focused individuals who were starting to say, the market really is the solution to a lot of our social policy needs, who began to say, look, we've given too much to childcare and we're going to have to pull back and move to the market. And towards the end of the 1980s, Senator Peter Walsh, who was the finance minister, took a really strong stand on this issue and basically insisted that subsidies be opened up to the private sector. So it was in fact under Labor that the Australian government made its really big shift away from non-profit care and towards the market. And that, I think, is really quite interesting because up to that period, Australia had developed a model of childcare funding that was unique in the world and that was really highly regarded. What was unique about it was that we had Commonwealth funding going to non-profit services, but we had parents and staff managing those services. So it wasn't a system such as they had in Scandinavia or France, where the state ran all the services as if they were little mini schools. It was a genuinely community and family and parent-based and staff-based model of service provision, but buttressed by a combination of Commonwealth subsidies and parent fees on a sliding scale. A very good model, in my view.
You're listening to ABC Radio National. Kerry Phillips here with Rear Vision. Today, a history of childcare centres in Australia. The move to the market was completed under the Howard government, which gradually removed completely any special subsidy for not-for-profit childcare and set up a most unusually attractive business opportunity. The government would now fund parents directly for the children they had in childcare, in effect guaranteeing 40 to 50% of an operator's income.
The Howard government brought in a whole suite of changes to the subsidies that really opened the sector to private interests in a way that was unprecedented in Australia and unparalleled in the rest of the world. So what we saw very rapidly after the Howard government changes was the emergence of this totally new phenomenon, which was childcare providers listing on the stock exchange. And the first of those was ABC Learning, but there were a number of others as well. In fact, we have private operators and businessmen saying they'd never been in such a business where there was rapid growth, where it was underwritten by government, and where government was exhorting parents to go out and actually make sure that they spent their money in private services. So we then experienced a very rapid growth in the number of funded childcare places in Australia, although what we also saw was a restructuring of the market. And so although expenditure on childcare went up very rapidly under Howard, and although some people grew extremely rich from the profits of childcare, Eddie Groves, for example, the former CEO of ABC Learning, was named the richest person under 40, I think, in about 2006 on the basis of his childcare business. But in fact, during that period, what we actually saw were the big, quite predatory companies taking over the smaller private providers and also driving out of business a lot of the non-profit care. So we didn't necessarily get the expansion of services that had been predicted by market theorists, but what we saw was a really big restructuring of the market.
That point of moving from what I call a supply side style of funding, which is to provide funds for staff and directly to services to ensure that particular levels of qualification and quality are in place or whatever, to what is a demand side of funding, that is to provide funds primarily to parents to enable them to choose the kinds of provision that they might want, was a fundamental shift in Australia, and parents were essentially, whether it was made explicit or not, the drivers of quality from then onwards. The assumption being that parents' choices would be to the best quality provision that was available. Clearly, parents would choose the best that's there for their child, and that that kind of decision-making in a market would drive quality and drive quality up. Markets and childcare don't go together. In a classic sense, one sees childcare as an example of market failure, and it's effectively because the benefits in a market are not only to the individual making the transaction, that is the parent and the producer of the service, the childcare provider. Benefits are to children over time and to community and society at large.
The idea of parental choice in childcare is too large an issue to cover here, but for most parents there were no choices, and where there might have been options, few parents had the time or expertise to make an educated decision. Although an accreditation system did guarantee certain minimum standards of staff qualifications and ratios, an open market in childcare didn't drive up quality.
At the top of the market, they most certainly did. So the for-profit centres that exist to take care of the children of high-powered lawyers, for instance, I'm sure they are truly splendid. It was the other end of the market where what you were doing was competing to offer affordable childcare, yet still take the profit out of it. And you could only do that against a not-for-profit centre by either reducing the quality of care or reducing the pay that you offered your workers, which means employing a lot of unqualified people and only the minimum number of qualified staff. They're still paid less per hour than car park attendants in most cases if they're unskilled. Community childcare is committed to qualified staff, as indeed was municipal childcare. The for-profit centres at the bottom end of the market were committed to having the bare minimum of qualified staff, and the rest were just people who I'm sure were very dedicated to their work, but they had no educational training at all.
Most of the action on the share market today was in the childcare business. The three biggest listed operators of creches, ABC Learning Centres, Childcare Centres of Australia and Peppercorn Management, announced a three-way merger with ABC on top. Now, the share prices of all three went up, but the big winner was Peppercorn.
In the commercial childcare market, there was money to be made.
Companies such as ABC Learning had a very clear business plan about expansion and increasing their share in the market. So sometimes companies like that would move, let's say, into a small country town, buy up two or three centres, introduce some rather aggressive pricing, in other words, put their fees pretty low until the other services were driven out of business. Then they could take over those services and then put the prices up. But in that intervening period, the strength of a big company like ABC Learning could simply not be warded off by a little community-based organisation. And small private centres and community-based both fell to these big, strong companies in that period. ABC Learning was a very interesting company, and I think the intricacies of its business model are going to take a long time to unfold. But it certainly didn't only provide childcare. It, or companies to which it was very closely related, did a whole lot of other things. So there was one closely related company that did the photographing of children in childcare centres. There was another entity that provided staffing to the whole of the ABC empire. There were, of course, Eddie Groves's other businesses, such as owning the Brisbane Bullets basketball team. There was a toy company with which ABC was closely related that had an exclusive contract to provide the toys and the play equipment to ABC centres, not just in Australia, but around the world. So it was a very complex web of businesses and companies. Another one was a finance business that lent parents the cash to pay their fees when they were not able to do so, or when they were waiting for rebates to come in from federal government. So it was a very multifaceted company.
Much of the story of the failure of ABC Learning has yet to be revealed, but it grew very big very quickly here in Australia and then looked overseas. According to Professor Brennan, at the time of its collapse, it had become the second biggest provider of childcare in the United States, and a company that it owned was the largest provider in the United Kingdom.
ABC is a result of a series of steps along the way that that governments in Australia have made, both Labor and Liberal, that enabled and encouraged the growth of this sector and facilitated the growth of corporate provision, which was unheard of in other places. It wouldn't have been tolerated in other sectors of early learning or development. If you could transpose this kind of a situation onto primary schooling, for example, it would never have occurred, because the community would have resisted it, government wouldn't have considered the prospect of having a private enterprise entirely take over the percentage of the market that they did in this country. It just, even from a risk minimisation point of view, what if that group failed, which they did? You know, who bails out at the end? The taxpayer, the government. So even from the most limited way of thinking, it was a poor decision.
Professor Colette Taylor, Chair of Early Childhood Education and Care at Melbourne Graduate School of Education. We also heard from Professor Deb Brennan, Deputy Director of the Social Policy Research Centre at the University of New South Wales, and Professor Shirley Swain from the Australian Catholic University. And when you're thinking about some of the things we've heard today, it's worth bearing in mind that Australia spends less than half of 1% of our national income on our young citizens of tomorrow, compared with, say, Denmark, which spends 2% of GDP. Technical production on Rear Vision today was done by Jenny Parsonage. I'm Keri Phillips.
Well, I think what parents want to know is that their childcare centre will be open. They'll be able to drop the kids off for care. The receiver has said that that will happen. The government is working with the receiver and the banks, and our highest priority is to ensure that services are there for people to rely on.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.